Women have been playing football for more than 150 years, and it's always been political. Some have been celebrated, but others have been ridiculed, criticized, and forgotten. This is the Forgotten 11, the hidden history of women's football.
I'm not going to the White House. No.
You know, there was a lot of critics talking about us about way back, so I suck on that one.
Give me the effing ball.
Playing like a girl means you're a badass.
Hi. Welcome to the Forgotten 11. I'm Chris McGlynn. Today, we're going to finish up with the Rebel Women's World Cups. But first, I really enjoy doing this show, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. If you'd like to help out, head over to patreon.com/forgottenxi and support the show if you can. If you can't, you can help spread the word about the show on social media. Follow the show at ForgottenXI on Twitter, and you can join the Slack channel for all sorts of bonus goodies. Check the show notes for links. Okay, today, after two decades of Women's World Cups, they're organized without FIFA. Women take the fight directly to FIFA. And again, they make history. In 1980, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Men's World Cup, Uruguay held a tournament called the Mundialito, or Little World in Spanish. They invited the six men's teams who previously won a World Cup to compete. No one really paid much attention to it. But it had a nice ring to it. The Mundialito? On April 1st, 1981, the Asian Ladies Football Confederation sent another letter to FIFA. The ban had been lifted for 10 years, and FIFA had done little to promote women's football, and in many places, FIFA and various FAs were still working against women playing football. The Asian Ladies Football Confederation declared that since FIFA was doing nothing, it was time for women's organizations to come together and create an organization to regulate and promote the women's game internationally. It was both a plea for FIFA to do anything and a threat to FIFA's complete control of the game. Vice President of the Asian Ladies Football Confederation, Veronica Chan. Is there a clause in your rules that forbids women's football from having their own body to organize competitions? What right has FIFA to insist that the ALFC must not be allowed to function on its own? In 1978, the Asian Ladies Football Confederation created the Women's World Invitational Tournament, and they will hold its second edition in 1981. But they also created another one, which they called the Mundialito. It was played in Japan, between Japan, Italy, England, and Denmark. The Asian Ladies Football Confederation was making connections with women's teams all over the world, not just Asia. 1981 had to be a very busy time for the ALFC. In June, they organized the Asian Women's Championship in Hong Kong with eight countries. In September, they hold this Mundialito in Japan with four other nations. In October, they organized the second Women's World Invitational Tournament in Taiwan with 14 teams. Veronica Chan again. I've never got sick of football. It'll be nonstop until my last breath. Women's activities still aren't successful. I can't stop. It's nonstop. Everything is nonstop. I'm still interested. It's in my blood. The Asian Ladies Football Confederation are quickly becoming the leading candidate to subvert FIFA's total dominance of the game. And they are clearly letting FIFA know that they are both willing and perfectly capable of doing so. From September 6th to the 9th, as part of a festival to celebrate the creation of one of the world's first artificial islands, Japan, Italy, England, and Denmark will play round-robin matches in Kobe and Tokyo to determine the winners of the 1981 Women's World Cup called the Mundialito. On the 6th, Italy and Denmark play to a 1-1 draw in Kobe. Then England beat Japan 4-0. The teams then traveled to Tokyo for the final matches. On the 9th, Italy destroys Japan 9-0, while Denmark beats England 1-0. Italy is declared the winner on goal differential. The Nadashiko, Japan's team, have a bit of work to do. And this is a bit of an aside, but I kind of love the team's name. Japan's team name, Nadashiko, means something like ideal or perfect woman. It comes from the phrase Yamato Nadashiko, The translation is something like the personification of the ideal, beautiful Japanese woman. Kind, gentle, and poised. All that stereotypical girls are just pretty nonsense. But here's why I like the name. The Japanese women's team have co-opted the word Nadeshiko to mean a fast, aggressive, and tricky style of play. Dangerous and smart strikers, and a defensive line that makes it very difficult to get anywhere near the box. In 2011, they beat the U.S. to win the World Cup. The Nadeshiko are one of the most successful teams in Asia. Sounds ideal to me. You may have noticed that Italy participates in most of these Women's World Cups that aren't called cups. The reason for this is that they established a Women's Serie A football league in 1968. After a bit of a rocky start, by 1974, Women's Serie A is one of the few women's domestic leagues in the world. The league ensures that they have both the scouts and the player development to continually field world-class teams. In 1984, the Italian Soccer Federation decided that they would host the Mundialito in northern Italy. Italy, West Germany, Belgium, and England participate. The stadiums were small, just two of them, one with a capacity of 2,500, the other 5,000. On August 19th, the teams begin a group stage with West Germany beating Italy 2-1. The next day, England and Belgium pull off a 1-1 draw. On the 21st, Italy beats Belgium 4-0. The next day, Germany beats England 2-0. Then Belgium, somehow, beats West Germany 2-0. Italy and England also manage a 1-1 draw. England beats Belgium 2-1 for third place. And on the 26th, Italy beats West Germany 3-1 to win the final of the 1984 Mundialito. And here I have to point out two players for Italy. Both Rose Riley and Elisabetta Vignotto score in this match. Elisabetta Vignotto started playing Serie A football at the age of 16 in 1970. She continued to play until 1990. She scored 467 goals in 461 appearances for her clubs and 107 for Italy in 109 FIFA-recognized matches. 574 in total. The 107 goals for Italy was a world record at the time, broken in May of 1989 by Mia Hamm. Rose Riley was born in Scotland and started playing at the age of 7. In 1973, she turned pro and played for Stade de Reims in France. Remember them? Before she transferred to AC Milan. She won the Golden Boot in 1978 and 81. In the 1978-79 season, she played for both Milan and Italy and Reims in France, sometimes on alternating days. She won both titles that year. When she retired in 1995, she had won 8 Serie A titles, 1 French title, 4 Italian Cups, and at least 1 Women's World Cup that wasn't a World Cup. In 2007, she was inducted into the Scottish Sports Hall of Fame, and the next year, the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. In 2011, she was awarded the Scottish Football Players Association Merit Award. She was knighted in January of 2020, for her services to women's football. Okay, before we get to the next Mundialito, we have to make a brief stop in China. In October of 84, China has a semi-pro women's league, and they host an international tournament in Xi'an, China. Xi'an is geographically right in the middle of the country. They grow a lot of wheat and corn there, kind of like Iowa. While Xi'an is a large city, it's probably most famous for the Terracotta Warriors, and at one time, it was the capital of Imperial China. This wasn't quite a World Cup, but it was played the same way. 4 international teams and 4 Chinese teams played. Group A was Italy, Japan, Liaoning, Guangxi. Group B is Tianjin, Shanxi, Australia, and the Sting are back from the United States. The Chinese teams don't do well, scoring just 5 goals against the foreign teams. Italy and Japan, top Group A, Australia and the Sting, top Group B. In the semifinals, Australia's Matildas beat Japan's Nadeshiko 6-2. And when the Sting face Italy's Rose Riley and Elisabetta Vignotto, the Sting beat them 3-2. The third place match sees Italy defeat Japan 5-1. The final will see the Sting face the Matildas. On October 24th, the Sting's Tony Catchings scores the only goal of the match against Australia in the 65th minute, and the Sting win the tournament. With the success of the Sting, U.S. soccer decides maybe the U.S. could field a women's national team. In 1985, there was something in the U.S. called the Olympic Sports Festival, sort of a practice event for the Olympics. In 1985, they include women's football for the first time. Around 70 women, mostly college students, participated. At the end of it, Coach Mike Ryan picked 17 players he felt were the best and told them, "Welcome to the U.S. Women's National Team." The players were Kim Wyant, Kathy Ridgewell, Emily Pickering, Ann Orison, Sharon McMurray, Lori Henry, Tuka Healy, Ruth Harker, Cindy Gordon, Linda Gansitano, Stacey Enos, Lori Bylan, Tara Buckley, Denise Boyer-Murdick, Denise Bender, Pam Bauman-Cornell, and Michelle Akers. They got 3 days of training, men's uniforms, a pair of cleats, a USA patch that they would have to sew onto the jerseys themselves, and they were off to Italy for the 1985 Mundialito. The 85 Mundialito saw Italy, Denmark, England, and the U.S. compete. Italy and the USA play the first opening match on August 18th. The Italian fans welcome the newly formed U.S. team with a cheer that is a bit legendary. The U.S. players are not used to crowds. They've mostly played in universities in front of friends and family, soccer not really being a thing in the United States at the time. If the letters U, S, and A were a word, they would spell USA in Italian. To welcome the American team, the Italians chant USA before the match. USA becomes sort of a battle cry for the U.S. team. The U.S. loses the opening match against Italy 1-0. The next day, Denmark beats England 1-0. On the 20th, Italy and England draw 1-1, followed by Denmark-USA drawing 2-2. Michelle Akers has the honor of scoring the very first goal for the U.S. official team, followed by Emily Pickering. Italy beats Denmark 2-1 the next day, and the last match of the group sees England beat the U.S. 3-1. The third place match sees Denmark beat the U.S. 1-0, and in the final, England beats Italy 3-2. The U.S. team was also paid about $10 a day for their efforts. So my best guess is they each got about $100. The 1986 edition of the Mundialito World Cup that's not a World Cup sees 6 teams. Italy, of course, as the hosts. Italy's team, by the way, is Le Azzurri, or the Blues. Mexico's La Tri and Japan's Nadeshiko are Group A. Group B is the U.S., China's Iron Roses, and Brazil. Italy and Japan top their group. The U.S. and China top Group B. In the semifinals, Italy beats China 3-0, and the U.S. beats Japan 3-1. The third place match sees China beat Japan 2-1, and the final is Italy against the United States. Italy won 1-0. The final Mundialito is played in 1998. Group A is Italy, West Germany, and the U.S. Group B is England, France, and a second Italian team. Italy and the U.S. top Group A, while France and England top Group B. In the semis, Italy beats France 3-0, and England's Lionesses defeat the U.S. 2-0. The third place match sees the U.S. win 1-0 over France's Le Blues, and England beat Italy 2-1 in the final. In 1986, FIFA held its 45th Congress to discuss all things football. They admitted new members, they discussed the World Cup, they made announcements, and gave awards. 100 men patted themselves on the back for another 4 years of the beautiful game. Before the meeting, they had handed out their annual report to attendees. One of the people who read the report was about to make FIFA history. Her name was Ellen Villa. In the 82-year history of FIFA, no woman had ever spoken at a FIFA meeting except as a translator. Here's Ellen Villa. Imagine this situation. Me, standing just 1.5 meters, or 5 feet, in height, and the microphone too high in front of 100 men, well aware that I'm the first woman to stand in this gallery. It was terrifying. Ellen Villa had been advocating for the women's game in Norway since the 1970s. She organized and played on casual teams. She personally had traveled to every club in Norway to argue the case for the women's football. Eventually, the Norwegian FA agreed, and they sent her to this meeting of FIFA to argue the case for diversity in football. Here she is again. I actually changed the beginning of my speech right at the very last minute. FIFA had sent us this annual report a few hours earlier, and there was only half a page on women's football. Half a page. 99% of this report was for men only. So I started my speech with a scream of anger. She argued that promoting the women's game was good for everyone. She said that women playing meant more people advocating for the game. More women meant that there would be more pitches built for everyone to play on. More women playing meant more coaches and more referees. More women meant more eyeballs, more fans. More women meant more football. She demanded that FIFA take the women's game seriously. She demanded that they invest resources into the women's game around the world. She demanded that FIFA create a Women's World Cup. To the surprise of pretty much everyone, FIFA agreed, finally. If you're counting, there were two Fife World Cups in 70 and 71. There was Women's World Invitational in 78, 81, 84, and 87. And the Mundialitos in 81, 84, 85, 86, and 88. That's 11 World Cups. And we're not even done yet. In 1988, FIFA decided to check out this whole women's footy thing. They wanted to find out if a women's football tournament could be popular or successful. Which, I gotta say, is either incredibly stupid or incredibly naive. I mean, 11 successful World Cups organized by people with way less money or exposure than FIFA, and FIFA was actively trying to stop them. Teams with little or no financial support. Maybe if FIFA had the same passion or support for the women's game as Veronica Chan, or Alice Miot, or Ellen Gile, or any of the players, maybe women's football would take off. Maybe if the largest sporting organization in the world promoted a tournament involving women, maybe women's football would be a big deal. Okay, in 1988, in the hinterlands of China, 12 nations compete in the FIFA Women's Invitational Tournament. Group A is China, Canada, the Netherlands, and Ivory Coast. Group B is Brazil, Norway, Australia, and Thailand. And last, Group C, is Sweden, the United States, Czechoslovakia, and Japan. To the surprise of absolutely no one, except FIFA, the opening match between China and Canada saw 45,000 people in the stands. Throughout this FIFA, not a World Cup, people filled the stadiums. China and Canada eventually topped Group A. Group B was Brazil and Norway, with Sweden and the U.S. on top in Group C. On the 12th of June, Brazil ties China 0-0 for third, and Brazil wins on penalties. The final was Norway and Sweden. Linda Medlin of Norway scored the only goal to win the FIFA Women's World This Is Not a Cup Invitational. So that's 12 not World Cups over almost 20 years before FIFA finally get around to organizing a FIFA Women's World Cup. And that doesn't count all the regional international tournaments all over the world. A dozen Women's World Cups in front of hundreds of thousands of fans, and FIFA finally sees the light and decides, yeah, women's football can be a thing. Who knew? In 1981, 87 years after FIFA is formed, and 61 years after the first Men's World Cup, FIFA finally holds the first Women's World Cup. Although, if you remember, even after all that time, and the dozen successful women's tournaments in the 70s and 80s, FIFA in 91 isn't yet willing to call it a World Cup. So this was at first called the FIFA World Championship for Women's Football for the M&M's Cup, later renamed the first Women's World Cup. Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire were movie stars and great dancers on film. In 1988, an American politician named Ann Richards gave a speech where she praised Ginger Rogers and women in general with this quote. If you give women a chance, we can perform. After all, Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did. She just did it backwards and in high heels. Thanks for listening. As always, don't forget to share the show, leave a review, and tell a friend. Check the show notes for extra info and goodies. You can join the Slack channel there. At Slack channel, you'll find pictures of these teams, other information that I can't necessarily share on the show. And you know, I do some research there and share it there. And if you're a musician or you know a musician, I'm happy to promote your music on the show if I can use it. And I will see you next time.